Welcome. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Good to see you. I haven't seen you for a while. Been away. Today I'm going to speak about under Krishna's umbrella. Under Krishna's umbrella. So what is that concept? That's what came to me when I was meditating on this talk. And I thought, yeah, under Krishna's umbrella. What would that mean? What would that be like? Well, that would mean that everything is fine. Everything is wonderful. We are under complete protection all the time. There must be something that we would have to worry about. No, we wouldn't. Not a thing. Can you imagine the burden of care lifted from your shoulders, from that, you know, that cloud that hangs over your head sometimes? That cloud evaporated, dissipated, gone. Under Krishna's umbrella. What a concept. Well, how do we get there? How do we get under Krishna's umbrella? You're just in time, I'm going to tell you. Krishna has, well, he has many energies, but two energies principally. Mahamaya and Yogamaya. Or we can say Apara Prakriti and Para Prakriti. So Mahamaya is the external energy of God, material world, material creation. Yogamaya is the internal energy, the spiritual energy of God. Same thing, Apara Prakriti is material energy. Para means superior, supreme. Apara means not. So Apara means material energy. And Para Prakriti, spiritual energy. When we're here in the material world and we have no consciousness, we're not enlightened, those of us who are not, there are a lot of people who are not, my friends. Millions upon millions. Are we under the protection of the spiritual energy in that state of mind? When we have no consciousness of God, yes or no? No. And then we are subject to suffering, are we not? Are we subject to birth, death, old age, disease, repeatedly? Yes, we are. That's when we're under the influence of the Mahamaya, or the external energy of God. So in order to rise above that, we have to take shelter of the spiritual energy of God. We have to go under Krishna's umbrella, so to speak. So turning to the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, Mahatmanas Tumam Partha, Daivim Prakriti. Daivim prakritim ashrata. Bhajantya nanya manaso yatva bhutaram avyayam. So what does this mean? This is Krishna speaking to Arjuna, his disciple, his friend, his cousin. Krishna's driving his chariot. Arjuna's on the chariot. He's supposed to fight. He's the warrior. He's the prince. Doesn't want to fight. And Krishna's explaining true understanding to him in this moment of weakness and bewilderment. And Krishna says, O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, Mahatma, what does Mahatma mean? Great soul. That word in India is used quite frequently. It's bandied about a little too easily. Are Mahatmas easy to find? You can find them on every street corner in India, can't you? You can find them out front of every temple with a begging bowl. No, Mahatmas? No. No, not that easy. Not that easy. Just because they're dressed in spiritual dress, have some tilak, Does that mean they're Mahatmas? No. Not necessarily. He says, the great souls are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service, here in the Sanskrit, bhajantya, bhajanti. They're worshipping me, mam bhajanti, ananya manaso, manaso with a mind that is ananya, single-pointed. Single-pointed mind, singly directed at God. Because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Bhuta Adim, the original person, Avyayam, inexhaustible. And what else does Avyaya mean? This other word, another meaning for it, Avyaya, inexhaustible. So, those are the Mahatmas. That's how you become under the protection of the divine nature. You enter into a reciprocal loving relationship with God as a person. Why a person? Why not energy? God can be energy, yes. God is energy also. Because it's too difficult to enter into relationship with energy, with an amorphous substance that's just energy or just light or just whatever. It's too difficult. Every relationship you have in this world, any personal relationship, is with a person. You may tell me you love your dog or your cat. That is still an identity. That is a particular individual, is it not? And there it is. It has a shape, it has a form, it has behaviors, it has characteristics. I love my dog, and your dog loves you. It's personal. Relationships come in a personal form. And that's how they are structured, that's how they're managed, and that's how they unfold. Oh, not with God. God's just energy. Yeah, well, good luck with that. If you go into relationship with God as a person, then it becomes tangible, real, reciprocal. Here, Prabhupada says in the purport, in this first verse, the description of the Mahatma is clearly given. The first sign of the Mahatma is that he's already situated in the divine nature. He's not under the control of the material nature. Oh. This is how we get out of the control of the material nature. How we escape it. How is this affected? This is explained in the 7th chapter. One who surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, at once becomes freed from the control of the material nature. Daivi yesha gunamayi mama maya doratyaya. This divine energy of mine, consisting gunamayi of the three modes of nature, is doratyaya. Very, very difficult to overcome. Almost impossible to overcome. Mam evi ye prapadyante, ye, but those who prapadyante surrender unto me, mayam etam tarantite, they cross over. Taranti, they cross over very easily. That's how you do it. You know somebody. Krishna. Prabhupada continues, this is the qualification. One can become free from the control of material nature as soon as he surrenders his soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we're going to find out what that means and how to do it as we go. Because it can't be that easy, can it? That is the preliminary formula. Being marginal potency As soon as the living entity is freed from the control of material nature, he is put under the guidance of the spiritual nature. Remember we've talked about Tatastha Shakti. We have divine energy, soul, like Jiva Tattva. We have spirit, material energy, like Prakriti. And then we have the living beings. Well, living beings are Jiva. So maybe I should say Vishnu Tattva, Maya, material energy. And we have us, Jiva. But we are called Tatastha. Tatastha. Situated on the edge. We're on the proverbial edge. Edge of what? We can go this direction and reflect material nature, or we can go this direction, reflect spiritual nature. And the best example of that is the shoreline of the ocean. If there's sand, the waves are coming in, the water is coming in, the sand is mixed with water, the sand is on the shore, and the sand and water mix. Which is sand, which is water? When they mix like that, they're on the edge. That's us. We're spiritual, but we mix with material, so it becomes confused, if you will. The guidance of the spiritual nature is called Daivi Prakriti. Prakriti means nature. Daivi, what does Daivi mean?
Sacred.
Divine, sacred, coming from the root, what?
Div.
Div, Deva, which means godly, to shine, right? So that's where it comes from. So when one is promoted in that way by surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one then attains to the stage of a Mahatma, of a great soul. That's how you become a great soul. And if you walk around in spiritual clothing, and you act holy, and you're completely an illusion, but you think you're something special, and maybe you know a few things, because you read a few things, does that make you spiritual? Not unless you have a relationship directly with God. And if you do, then the symptom, the major symptom of that is what? Humility. Humility. Right? Okay. Now, he goes further. Satatam kirtayanto mam, in fact, this is the very next verse, 9:13. This is 9:14. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dridavrata namasyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. It means always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me. These great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Now he's telling you, he's giving you a little bit more information. Always chanting my glories. Well, you can be chanting a mantra. You can be chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna Mantra. You could be reading about Krishna. You could be telling your friend. You could be meditating. These are all examples. And bowing down. Bowing down before God is, it's a simple thing, but the first time, when India, everybody does it, they're raised that way. When in the West, for some people, you invite them into the temple, and you don't tell them to bow down, but they see everybody else is bowing down. It's very challenging sometimes for the ego, you know. Whoa, I'm going to get down on my hands and knees on the floor? Yeah. Yeah, it's God. You know, why wouldn't you? It's wonderful. It might take a little time to get to that point. Anyway. So, in this purport, Prabhupada says the Mahatma cannot be manufactured by rubber stamping an ordinary man. Mahatmas are not a dime a dozen. His symptoms are described here. A Mahatma is always engaged in chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord, Krishna, the personality of Godhead. He has no other business. He's always engaged in the glorification of the Lord. In other words, he's not an impersonalist. We can have somebody who's an impersonalist, who sees God as energy, and can be spiritual. Is it true? Yes, they can be. But unless they understand the personal aspect of God, they can't go to that next level. A lot of times, I've been doing Vedic astrology for 40 years. It's my 40th year around the world. I have met disciples of every guru and every organization you can mention, I think. And a lot of times the ones that are impersonalists, who believe God is simply energy, God cannot be a person because we're all people. So the material world is full of people and persons. The spiritual world must be the opposite. It must be. It can't be like this. So that means in the spiritual world, in the spiritual realm, we can't have this diversity and this variety. That's what they believe. And some of these people are very, very learned. Some of them are scholars. They've studied. But oftentimes what you find is there's an ego behind it, because the scholarship is there, the learning is there, you know, and I've been at it a while, type of thing, you know. So you can't really tell them, or you can't not so much tell them, but open them up to this other aspect. So Prabhupada says here, in other words, Mahatma is not an impersonalist. When the question of glorification is there, one has to glorify the Supreme Lord, praising His holy name, His eternal form, His transcendental qualities, and His uncommon pastimes. Well, let me ask you, who has more uncommon pastimes than Krishna? Come on. I'm not going to itemize them today, but Krishna's uncommon pastimes never end, and they are amazing. One has to glorify all these things. Therefore, a Mahatma must be attached to the personality of Godhead. If you don't want to be attached to Krishna as the personality of Godhead, well, then you figure out which personality of Godhead you want to be attached to. And you attach yourself. One is attached to the impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord, the Brahma Jyoti. What is the Brahma Jyoti? It is the effulgence or light coming off what?
Krishna's divine form.
Krishna's divine form. Off the form of God. Prabhupada sometimes gives this example of, sometimes we're in a room, we see beams of sunlight coming through the window. And those are the beams of sunlight. You can see them with your eyes. And we like those, usually. We enjoy that. Then we can look out, we can go outside and look up at the sky, and we can see the sun planet. The sun planet, well, we can't see it for very long. We can't stare at it. The sun planet and the sun beams, they're the same, but they're different, aren't they? They're two different things. And beyond the sun planet, if you were able to travel to the sun planet, which these bodies are not really, you know, you'd have to have at least some sort of spacesuit, or what do you call, what's the ones that don't burn? Do you call those? You'd have to have some special sort of apparatus. Well, forget it. You won't go there. But if you got to the sun planet, then you'd meet whom?
The man in charge.
The man in charge. Vivasvan, the sun god. Because he's running the show there. So you've got sunbeams, you've got the sun ball, sun globe, and you've got the sun god. So same thing with God, same idea, same concept. So the Brahma Jyoti is the light coming off of God. And this is what impersonalists envision themselves merging into. Can they merge into that when they leave their bodies? Yes. The Vedas explain that this Brahma Jyoti, or Brahman, is made up of what? Billions upon billions of souls. Souls. That's what it consists of. So you can jump on in there too, if you like. Do you have a distinct individuality? No. Is there stuff to do? No. Is there any variety? No. Is there any activity? No. But it's blissful. Yeah. Yeah. The Mahatma is always engaged in different activities of devotional service. On any given day, my friends, that your waking day, do you sit there the whole day? Well, I probably should do something. Well, I could do this, I could do that, I could go here, I could go there. Can you just sit there all day long and do nothing? Pretty hard. You probably do a whole lot of things on a given day. Some days, way busier than others. Right? And we find that what? We find that very stimulating. Yeah, sometimes we got to do things we don't want to do. But on the whole, it's very stimulating because we can choose all the different things we like to do. And this is called variety. And variety is stimulating. And it's exciting. And it's fun. And it's interesting. And welcome. So, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing and chanting about Vishnu, not praising a demigod or a human being. That's interesting. We went to Delhi one time, and one of my clients was from the Sagar family. Sagar used to do the publications, comic books, and then they did the Ramayana on for television. They did a lot of media stuff in India some time ago. Maybe they still do. They're quite famous publications, Sagar. And this gentleman, who's one of the sons, you know, or grandsons, and he took us to the Swami Narayan Temple in Delhi. Have you been there? Fabulous temple. I mean, fabulous. It's really something else to see. And it's the organizational level of everything is quite... I mean, when they do things in India and the big temples, it's impressive. It's impressive. If you've been to some of those huge temples like Tirupati, etc., you know, you go, how do they do all this? Because the manpower alone, and then all of the stuff that you need in order to feed people, etc. It's amazing. So, it was beautiful, and we watched different displays. I think we watched videos and stuff. Did they have some animatronics? Animatronics, you know, like in Disneyland. They had that. It's all about Swami Narayan. So, I'm not questioning Swami Narayan because that's their guru. Accept that. When I turned to Kalini, I said, "But where's God in all this? Where's God? There's no mention of God. Isn't it about God, ultimately? There's no mention of God. You praise humans. We praise politicians. I don't know why. We praise actors and actresses. Some of us praise demigods. That is not Mahatma. Mahatma means relationship directly to God. Directly. So, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. Hearing, chanting, remember, Smaranam, Padasevanam. Remembering Vishnu, God. The Mahatma does not divert his attention to anything outside of Krishna because he knows perfectly well that Krishna is the original Supreme Person. The cause of all causes. I always love that. Sarva Karana Karanam. How many things did you cause today? Did you cause one or two things to happen? Bet you did. How many people were affected by the things you caused or set into motion today? Two, three, thousand, 10,000 people? Sarva Karana Karana, cause of all causes. Krishna says, yes, but I do this, but with a spark of my splendor. Really? And everybody is affected. Everybody. Look at sunrise. Who's affected by sunrise? Come on. It's sunrise somewhere right now. Right? Can you imagine? This is what God does. In his spare time. This is not his main thing. His main thing is in the spiritual world. He just does this, you know, sort of to keep you happy. Because you don't want to be in the spiritual world. You'd rather be here and exercise the ego. Right? How's that going for you? Such a Mahatma or great soul develops through the association of other Mahatmas. We are very blessed, my friends. Very, very blessed. Because somehow Prabhupada showed up. That is a Mahatma. Whether you were there and met Prabhupada or didn't meet Prabhupada or saw him or did not see him, doesn't matter. Because he set all this into motion. The books are there. The method is there. The instruction is there. And most importantly, the love is there. The bhakti is there. It's available. He's long gone. Doesn't matter. It's still there. It's available. You didn't miss out. Then, Bhagavad Gita 9.22, Ananyash Chintayanto Mam Yejana Paryupasate Tesham Nityabhiyuktanam Yoga Kshemam Vahamyam. Wonderful verse. But for those who always worship me, you see in these verses, stick with me, stay connected, think about me, worship me, stay. What is this worship? What is he want to worship on? We could simplify that. Everything in this world was made by God. Everything. Or as it says in the Isha Upanishad, everything is controlled and owned by the Lord. everything. So it doesn't matter what you use or take advantage of, it actually, in the final analysis, comes from God. Huh? So this idea of worshiping God is essentially showing gratitude. How important is gratitude in our lives? Have some of you thought about this concept of gratitude? Have some of you thought about it to the point where you know you have to show or express gratitude every day, all day long? How many have come to this understanding? How many have come to this realization? More than half. Oh, my friends, that's the key. That's it. The more you express gratitude, you just watch everything unfold in your life. All kinds of doors will open to you. Just by being grateful? No, it can't be that easy. No, it is that easy. But your gratitude must be genuine. It can't be feigned. It can't be fake. It has to be real. For the smallest things, every little thing that anybody ever does for you, you must express gratitude. And you take it up to the level of God, it's gratitude which becomes worship, because God has given you everything. And without God, you wouldn't even exist. So we don't have to worship the person who just opened the door for you, but we have to show them gratitude. You take it up to the divine level, gratitude becomes worship. It's an act of worship. Does that make sense? I assume the burden of their supply and maintenance for those who meditate on me. You missing something? Don't worry. Yeah, if only I had this, or I need that, or, well, you know, sometimes you need those things, and sometimes you think you need that. And then we go to that famous saying, be careful what you wish for. You just might get it, right? So here's the purport. One who is unable to live for a moment without Krishna consciousness cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day. Being engaged in devotional service by hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshipping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, rendering other services, cultivating friendship, and surrendering fully to the Lord. Such activities are all auspicious and full of spiritual potencies, which make the devotee perfect in self-realization, so that his only desire is to achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a devotee undoubtedly approaches the Lord without difficulty. This is called yoga. That's yoga. Yoga kshemam vahamyaham. When you are in yoga, you are linked to God directly. All kinds of wonderful things take place. Yoga kshemam vahamyaham. By the mercy of the Lord, such a devotee never comes back to this material world, to this material condition of life. Kshema refers to the merciful protection of the Lord, his mercy. The Lord helps the devotee to achieve Krishna consciousness by yoga. And when he becomes fully Krishna conscious, the Lord protects him from falling down into a miserable condition of life. Well, I'm going to give you an example. I don't know if I'm the best example, but I'll give you an example. I just was on a month-long trip. I was in five cities in America. In the first city, Clinty was there for that part. We were in Oregon. My daughter got married. We had a sacred Agnihotra for her marriage, which came as a big surprise to her husband, I'm sure, who comes from a Christian family. And Kalini and I stayed in this absolutely wonderful place that was in the heart of nature and had this hot springs. Now, we rented the place. We rented a room there. But still, it was wonderful. Beautiful. Then I went to Los Angeles and somebody gave me an apartment to stay in Santa Monica, 6 blocks from the Pacific Ocean. Free. And I saw some clients there. Then I thought I'd take 3 days off because I was working and I'd go to the California desert because I was invited to come to the California desert, which is really hot and really beautiful. I love the desert. And somebody gave me a free house to stay in the California desert. On a golf course, I don't golf. But it is spectacular. You know how they manicure these places. So I stayed there for 3 days. Then I flew to Denver and stayed with my son. He insisted I take his bed, so I did. He slept on the couch, and I found myself wandering around in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, covered in snow. Then I went to New York, and somebody gave me an apartment to stay in New York, free. Penthouse apartment in Manhattan, 70th floor of the building, 70, overlooking the Hudson River, where Sully landed his plane not long ago. There I was. Yogakshemam vahamyaham. Whatever he needs, God gives. He does. That's only one example. There are many examples of it. Yes, I know we're humans. Yes, I know we are stressed out at times. Yes, I know we're wondering where the next bit of money will come from in order to pay for this and that. And here are all the bills. And we must be practical. I know that too. Give it to God. We have to get to the key factor in all of this because we haven't got there yet. We'll get there. Again in the 9th chapter he says, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. What's he saying? Krishna says, declare it boldly, Arjuna. Declare it boldly. Tell everyone. Tell the world. Name bhakta pranashyati. My devotee never perishes. In other words, what's the flip side of that statement? I will protect him, her, always. The full protection of God is yours. You need to ask for it. And you need to be ready to surrender your what? We said earlier, the soul. What comes before, as part and parcel of that? Surrender the ego. Have you noticed how much ego comes into play in your world, my friends? In your workplace, have you noticed? People exercising their egos, wanting to be important, thinking they know how to do something, but we all know they don't know how to do it. But that's the person in charge. So you kind of got to go along with it. You know what I mean, don't you? I used to work in corporate environments. I know. Thankfully, I don't work in them anymore. Not for many years. But you do. Some of you. This ego that people need to express and knock other people over with. Very problematic. Very problematic. The more we trim the ego, the faster we get to God. The faster we get to God. The more we become humble, the faster we get to God. The faster we reach the goal. Now, 10th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna explained, he's talking to Maharaj Yudhishthira, Arjuna's brother. Are you sitting down for that? Oh, good, you are. Sometimes, if I especially favor a devotee and especially wish to care for him, the first thing I do is take away his riches. Oh my God, where's that going to leave us? It takes away all our riches. We don't even have any riches. We have poors. We don't have riches. When the devotee becomes a penniless pauper or is put into a comparatively poverty-stricken position, his relatives and family members no longer take an interest in him. Ain't that the truth? You can read that in the newspaper. And in most cases, they give up their connection with him. Wait a second now. Hang on. Relax. Does Krishna do this to everybody? No. Why is he even mentioning it? Because sometimes people are too distracted by their status, their position, their riches, their wealth in life. Yet they're very sincere. Was it Raghunath Das Goswami? Raghunath Das Goswami came from an extremely wealthy family, and he kept trying to escape and become one of the disciples of Chaitanya. And every time he'd run away, and he had a wife, every time he'd run away, his father would send men to come and find him and pick him up and bring him back. Because in his mind, his status, his wealth, his circumstance were a distraction. That was his perception. Is that true for everybody? No, not necessarily. Can you have wealth, be a wealthy person, and be a devotee of Krishna? Yeah, you can. But the point here is, if it's a distraction, Krishna may remove it. That's the point. First of all, the devotee becomes unhappy because his riches have been taken away by Krishna. And he is made even more unhappy when his relatives desert him because of his poverty. We should know, however, that when a devotee falls into a miserable condition in this way, it is not due to past impious activities. What's a karmi? You know this word karmi? All of us in the material world are generating karma by our actions. They say thoughts, words, and deeds generate karma. Normally, but in Kali Yuga, just the deeds. Not the thoughts, not so much the words in Kali Yuga, only actions generate karma. Most everybody is generating karma, good karma, bad karma, and anishtam, ishtam, mishram, cha. Anishtam, undesirable, ishtam, desirable, and mishram, mixed karma. A karmi is somebody who's doing whatever he does for himself, perhaps for his family, and he's generating reaction. So that means we have to come back and we have to suffer or enjoy the karma in a future lifetime. Correct? That is the vast majority of people. Correct? That is a karmi. Okay? That's the idea. But, so Prabhupada says here, we should know, however, that when a devotee falls into a miserable condition in this way, it is not due to his karma phala. Phala means the fruits or the results of his actions, karma phala. The poverty of the devotee is a creation of the personality of Godhead. So we're understanding now more about being under Krishna's umbrella. Similarly, when a devotee becomes materially opulent, oh, you mean that can happen? A devotee could become very wealthy and very successful on some. Yes, also, that could happen. You may say, well, that's more desirable. Yeah, maybe. That is also not due to the devotee's pious activities. Oh. In either case, whether the devotee becomes poorer or richer, the arrangement is made by the personality of Godhead. Why? Because the devotee is under the protection of the internal energy of God. Because you have what? A relationship to God. We're going to talk about faith in a minute. Belief. Because you even once chanted the names of God, even once thought about God, or made an offering to God on the altar or in your heart, then you are taken into the protection, the divine protection of God. You are brought under Krishna's umbrella. That's the idea. This arrangement is especially made by Krishna for his devotee in order to make the devotee completely dependent on him, on God, and to free him from all material obligations. He can then concentrate his energies, mind and body, everything, for the service of the law of the Lord, and that is pure devotional service. If a karmi performs auspicious acts, he is elevated to the heavenly planets. If he acts impiously, he's put into a hellish condition. But whether a devotee acts in a so-called pious or impious manner, he is neither elevated or degraded, but transferred to the spiritual kingdom. Why? Why doesn't he get the results of his karma like everybody else? Because he's not in that circumstance. He's under the divine protection of God. You understand this point? This is the point you need to understand. And what happens to you from that point forward in life is not karma. It's directly connected to Krishna and his desire to reciprocate with you and look after you and bring you along spiritually. Is he going to fulfill your material desires? Perhaps. Some. In every single way you want? I doubt it. He will often give you other things that you did not count on that are way beyond what you thought. So I suggest you do not limit in your little mind what is possible for you when you are dealing directly with God. How do you deal directly with God? Just by saying, I'm dealing directly with God. Sincerely. Can't be fake. Okay, that's more or less the point. It goes on. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavam mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvam iti sa mahatma sudurlaba. This is Bhagavad Gita. After many births and deaths, he who's actually in knowledge surrenders unto me. It's Krishna speaking. Knowing me to be the cause of all causes, there it is again. And all that is, such a great soul is very rare. Sa Mahatma. Here's Mahatma again. sudurlaba, hard to find. Go try to find a soul like this. Very difficult. Okay. So let's tie all this together through what? Faith. What is this contingent upon? Faith. Belief. It all sounds very nice. But how do you actually bring it into realization? By faith. Does faith not move mountains? Does it not say that in the Bible? Yes, it does. So, this is Prabhupada again. There are three divisions of Krishna conscious persons, or three degrees of faith, or three divisions of faith. Third class devotee. Prabhupada talks like that. Sometimes people, what do you mean third class? Third degree, third level, that's what he means. That's very much an Indian expression. Third class devotees are those who have no faith. They don't believe Krishna is God, necessarily. Or, they like to believe it, but they're not convinced. Yet, they're attracted. They gravitate toward it. Oh, this is all very nice. I like this. Mm-hmm. Do you believe Krishna is God?
I don't know.
Even if they are officially engaged in devotional service, which many can be, they cannot achieve the highest perfectional stage. Most probably, they may slip after some time. They may become engaged for a while. But they, because they do not have complete conviction and faith, it is very difficult for them to continue to practice their God consciousness. Because sustained practice is going to depend on the development of that faith, is it not? Right. We have practical experience in discharging our activities that some people come and apply themselves to Krishna consciousness with some hidden motive. This is Prabhupada. And as soon as they are economically a little well situated, they give up the process and they take to their old ways again. Sometimes, well, let me, you know, see what this guy's going to give me, this Krishna. And once that starts happening, okay, I'm out of here. It is only by faith that one can advance in Krishna consciousness. You want to get under Krishna's umbrella? How's your faith? Second level. Second class devotees are those who are not very advanced in their understanding of devotional philosophy, devotional scriptures, but who automatically have firm faith in Krishna Bhakti. They do have faith or service to Krishna. It is the best course, and so in good faith, they've taken it up. Thus, they are superior to the third class who have neither perfect knowledge nor faith. But by association and simplicity, they are trying to follow. The third class person in Krishna consciousness may fall down, but when one is in the second class, he does not fall down. What does fall down mean? Sometimes people are not clear on this. Why are those children making so much noise, is my question. Maybe you do something that you think you shouldn't do, or maybe are against the principles. Is that a fall down? You know, some people may argue with me, I don't see that as a fall down. A fall down is when you go away. Physically go away? No. In your heart. You go away. I had enough of this. I'm not doing this anymore. I want my old life back. Have I met people like this? Oh, absolutely. This spiritual business, it's too hard. Yeah, sometimes. I just want my old, I just want to be a normal person again. Good luck with that. Now that you've had some enlightenment, you want to go back into the mode of darkness and just carry on like you did before. Yeah. And some of them succeed in doing that. That's a fall down. That's a fall down. Fall down is when we lose the consciousness or the enlightenment that we gain. That's a fall down. That's how I see it. If you disagree, that's fine. A second class devotee doesn't fall down. I'm not saying you can't do something you shouldn't do, or feel you shouldn't do, or make a mistake, or commit a sin, whatever that may be. Yeah, you could still do that. Why? I didn't want to. Because, my friends, the karmic wheel that we're on is like a fan. And the fan is plugged in the wall and it's going full tilt. Right? And that's you on your karmic wheel of repeated birth and death and doing all your karmic activities that generate karma and all the rest of the nonsense that you might be involved in. Okay? Then when you're very sincere about spirituality and you're trying to surrender yourself to God sincerely in a yoga process like this, for example, what do you do with that fan? You've just pulled the plug out of the wall. That's what you just did. Correct? Did the fan stop abruptly when you pulled the plug? Tell me. Oh no. It's still going. What's it doing? It's winding down. Correct? It's slowing down. That's what's happening. And because of your material conditioning, what, of this lifetime? I don't think so. Your material conditioning goes back thousands of lifetimes. You don't even remember them all. We can hardly fault you for doing something that is ingrained in you for so many lifetimes, even though you're trying to rise above it. And you, my friends, should not be overly critical toward whom? Toward yourselves. If you're overly critical, all you're going to do is what? You're going to put yourself off. You're going to discourage yourself. What good does it achieve? Okay, I screwed up. All right. I shouldn't have done that. I'd rather I didn't do it. Okay. Acknowledge and move on. Move forward. First class devotees in Krishna consciousness is one who is well versed in the literatures, devotional service. Yes, you can just chant Hare Krishna. That's all you need to do. You want to keep it simple? Offer your food to Krishna. Offer your actions to Krishna. But really, you want to be complete in your spiritual understanding, you must have a philosophical basis. You must understand the philosophy. You have to understand some of these principles. You have to read the Bhagavad Gita. How many times have you read the Bhagavad Gita? How many times have you read it? Well, I've read it, I think, about 60 times. I'm not trying to impress you. I'm trying to tell you that wasn't near enough. Because there's still things I don't understand. I'm still understanding more over time. You need to read, or you need to listen to others. Okay? First class devotee has attained the stage of firm faith. There is no chance of falling down. One in the first class will surely make progress and achieve the result at the end. That's how you get under Krishna's umbrella. Your faith has to be sound, it has to be fixed, it has to be solid no matter what happens in life. Even if terrible things take place in your life, it cannot shake your faith. And do you think your faith will not be tested, my friends? Wrong. Your faith will be tested. It must be tested. It has to be tested. Otherwise, how will you know how strong it is? You don't have to organize a test, believe me. It will come. That's how you get under Krishna's umbrella. And you stay with that faith. And at the end of your life, you will not come back here. You will return to the spiritual world where you belong. The place your soul has been yearning for. Yearning for. For how long? You don't know how long. It's been that long. You can't remember how long it's been. That's where your soul wants to be, whether you realize it or not. And that's where you'll go. Okay? Thank you.
Hare
Krishna. Questions? Comments? Accusations? Robert?
I was just thinking, there are three classes of devotees. The third class has no knowledge or faith. The second class has developing faith. And the third one has faith plus knowledge. How would you characterize those for which knowledge develops before faith?
Knowledge develops before faith?
Yes.
Scholarly?
You wouldn't characterize them as devotees unless they have a growing faith in the first place?
Well, I will give you an example. Years ago, I was in Los Angeles. I went to Los Angeles because I wanted to study Sanskrit. And it happened very, very quickly. And there I was. And I was in the Sanskrit department learning Sanskrit so I could work on Prabhupada's books, which I did as a Sanskrit editor. The head of the Sanskrit department in L.A. at the time, who was a devotee somewhat older than me, so I looked upon him as my senior godbrother. I had been a devotee for about 2 years. That means living in the ashram for about 2 years. And this devotee had been in the ashram for 5 or 6 years. And he said to me one day, because we got to know each other, you know, I was working with him. He said, you know, when you chant or when you go in front of the deity, and this was a very, very intelligent guy. He was from an Ivy League school in New England, northeastern U.S., where all the Ivy League schools are, except for Stanford. And he was a real sharp guy, you know. So he said, when you chant Hare Krishna and chant in front of the deity, do you feel anything? I said, what? Like, do you feel anything? I said, what do you mean? Spiritually? Yeah. And I said, yeah, I do. That's why I'm here. That's why I joined. Oh. I said, do you feel anything? No. Oh. Yeah. So he'd been there for years. He didn't feel anything. It wasn't working for him for some reason. Yet he was a sincere soul. He was a nice person. He wasn't, you know, like, he was a pleasant person. He was extremely intelligent. He knew all kinds of stuff about the philosophy. But he had no taste. He had no ruchi. It was missing. And what happened subsequently? 2 or 3 years passed. In the interim, he thought he would go to Vrindavan in Radhakund and sit down and chant like a Babaji, do nothing but chant Hare Krishna all day long on beads. Good luck with that one, my friends, because you've got to be pretty advanced to sit there and do nothing and chant all day long. Hardly anybody can do it. And that's considered to be very advanced, by the way, in case you don't know that. Anybody who chants any mantra and is absorbed, very advanced. So he went there trying to do that. Thought, what is the guy doing? You know? Well, that didn't last very long. It lasted a couple months. He came back, got married. Anyway, God bless him. Subsequently, maybe 2 years later, he left after making great offense to Prabhupada in his statements. Not directly to Prabhupada, but great offense to the guru. Never recommended. Then, 5 years later, I heard he had joined a doomsday cult. And he was in a cave in northern Montana, protecting all their stores of food and everything else they had stored in the cave, carrying an M16 automatic rifle, waiting for the end of the world. I don't know, that's curious. That's a true story. So yeah, you can study philosophy and have no faith. That's the answer. It's possible. Do you truly understand that philosophy? You might understand it on a theoretical level. That's what jnanis, that's what a jnani is. Jnana is knowledge. A jnani is one who is in pursuit of knowledge. Does knowledge automatically generate faith? No. Does it generate faith? Yes. In many cases, but not automatically. Suppose you have solid faith. Does that generate knowledge? Not necessarily scholarly knowledge or knowledge of Shastra, but it actually could lead to every kind of knowledge, because if you have God in your heart and you have a relationship to God in your heart, He tells you everything. Do you know any devotees who God talks to regularly? Do you? I do. And He tells them everything they need to know. Not everybody's cut out for study. Does that answer the question?
It's the same thing that I was thinking in different words, so I'm happy to hear you understand.
Yeah. Faith is more important than knowledge. But faith and knowledge together means everything is covered. We must connect the heart with the head. Yeah? Prabhupada said it. He said, spirituality without philosophical understanding is mere sentiment. Or worse, it's fanaticism. Spirituality without the heart, without bringing in love and devotion, is mental speculation. I've met people who can quote all kinds of Shastra, like Victor.
Yeah.
They've studied all these books, they know Sanskrit verses, they know them inside out, but you know, it's like you're talking to an empty shell, because there's no ruchi. There's no taste. You must have the taste. How can you keep doing something over and over again when you have no taste for it? And the taste brings the faith, doesn't it? That's why you people who come over and over again for who knows how long since you were children, some of you might do it just out because you're supposed to. But there are many who do it because you have a relationship to God. You feel it in your heart. You feel that God is reciprocating with you. This is what we want, my friends. This is not like we're doing something in a vacuum. No. we're developing love and devotion. And if we're not, what are we doing? We're not doing it the right way, or we're not something. We're missing something. Okay? This is a wonderful methodology. Bhakti Yoga. Everything is included. For those of you who are more intellectual, oh, you can read till the cows come home. For those of you who are not so intellectual, but you're more heart-centered, fine. This is bhakti. This is the heart. This is divine, perfect, and complete. How lucky are we? Are we good?
Yay, Hari Bol.
We'd like to thank Jyoti and the group for being inspired.